The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, exploring the human endeavor.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
Hi, it's Patrick Cox here. And in a language like Spanish, that in the scheme of things is pretty closely related to English, you've got an awful lot of words that sound alike. Car, carro, fruit, fruta. No problem translating those. But watch out. There are also false friends. Words that sound alike, even share common etymology, but they don't mean the same things. The classic Spanish-English false friend is embarazada, came up in a recent pod. It sounds like it ought to mean embarrassed, right? But it actually means pregnant. When it's misused, hilarity ensues, or embarrassment. Now, if you're learning a second language in a classroom, that's where you make your mistakes. Doesn't really matter. But for immigrants, you're learning along the way as you're trying to get on in a new world. And sometimes a major life decision can ride on your understanding or misunderstanding of a false friend. Here's Daniela Gerson.
Search Medicare or the National Institutes of Health's Spanish language pages for hospice care, and you'll find the word translated to auspicio. May sound close enough, but to Los Angeles resident Manuela Flores, this just seems bizarre.
Auspicio, como donde están los niños huérfanos.
Auspicio means a place for orphans, says Flores, an immigrant from Nicaragua. Spanish speakers from other countries give different definitions. To some, it's a refuge for migrants. To others, a home for elderly people who have no families to support them. But whatever the variation, auspicio means a place for the destitute, and definitely not somewhere you would want your loved ones to end up.
Ay, mi niña, yo nunca existió ese programa en mi vida.
Flores says until recently, she'd never come across the concept of hospice care, and she wouldn't even know how to give a name to it in Spanish. In English, hospice means an end-of-life program that can include at-home medical services, as well as psychological and social support. For anyone who is eligible for Medicare or Medicaid, hospice care is free. But Latinos are making use of that service at lower rates.
We have patients being offered, basically, well, would you like to go to the poorhouse to die? And they say, of course, I don't want to do that.
Jason Bowman has devoted himself to studying Latino use of hospice care ever since he took a trip to Ecuador and learned the word was being mistranslated. The Brown University medical student has now completed a national study that has documented the low rate at which Hispanics access the service.
I think it's heartbreaking because from my point of view, I think the Hispanic culture, possibly more than any other, at least that I've studied, would benefit most from the central themes of hospice, which are, quality of care focused around family and friends and support, incorporating religion and spirituality, avoiding invasive, sterile environments like a hospital.
The Spanish and English words for hospice have the same Latin root, hospice. In Spanish, a few centuries back, the word was adapted to mean a home for the poor who were unable to care for themselves. In English, the concept of hospice as a service to care for the dying took off in the 1940s in Britain and was brought to America in the 1960s. Overall, hospice care is growing, and providers are marketing it to minorities. Listen to this promotional video from an Arizona hospice featuring testimony from a Latino family.
It was difficult for me. I was kind of skeptical with the whole idea of the hospice being a Hispanic, and we take care of our own. But me and my lady were struggling how to take care of mommy. But now that I'm here, the hospice is the best thing. It's the best decision that I ever made.
That's one person who was won over. But there are millions more facing deep cultural barriers. In California, Sylvia Alsterlich meets with migrant workers as a cultural liaison for Hospice of Santa Cruz County.
And I say that I work for hospice, and I ask, have you heard about hospice? And always there are many people who never heard that. So it's like, okay, that's great. So let me tell you, we don't use the word in Spanish, auspicio. And I say this, we use the word servicios de hospice.
She uses the English word to avoid confusion. But then comes the key next step, explaining a new concept.
And I also say that hospice is a program, but it's also a philosophy. And when I say the word philosophy, I look in the eyes to farm workers, and they all nod like, yes, they understand that. It's not just people coming to your house when someone is at the end of life, but it's a different relationship with death. It's not how you want to die. It's how you want to live until the end.
That's something that Manuela Flores, the Nicaraguan immigrant, wishes had been explained to her.
Hospice. Y hablan español. Están dándole explicaciones.
Flores tells me a healthcare worker also used the English word with her, but his explanation was inadequate. She could not grasp the concept of hospice care. When her mother-in-law died less than 48 hours after her family had approved the service, Flores was terrified that they had signed off on her death. Flores believes immigrants like her deserve a better explanation.
Yo no voy a regresar a mi país. Yo hago mi vida ya acá con toda mi familia.
I'm going to end my life here in the United States with all of my family, says Flores, who has lived in Los Angeles for nearly 3 decades. We may not know English, but we are working here, and we need to know about things like hospice care. For The World, I'm Daniela Gerson in Los Angeles.
That's a great example of something that we may think of as amusing or whimsical, perhaps, about the way that languages relate to one another. But here you have a situation where, well, the stakes are an awful lot higher than that. I don't know if you have any favorite false friends you want to let me know about. I'm especially interested in hearing, right now anyway, in situations where the stakes are higher, where there may be something to lose. Let me know. Also, give a listen, if you haven't already, to some of the other podcasts in PRI's new Soundworks network. There are podcasts from Farai Chidea, from Daniel Alarcón, also a new spin-off from Studio 360. It's called Sideshow. They're all smart, lively, fun. Give them a listen. Okay, so what words are children learning today that they weren't learning a generation ago, or even a decade ago? And where are they learning them from? The Oxford University Press and BBC Radio, they have this story writing contest going on. It's called 500 Words. That's the limit. There's an age limit, too. You have to be under 13. Well, the winner is about to be announced. But in the meantime, Oxford University Press has been crunching the numbers on word usage in the submissions to get a sense of what's hot for the under 13 set. And although this is a Brit competition, I wonder how much American kids would differ in their choices. They clearly would differ in many ways, but given where these words are coming from, online games, movies, TV shows, I imagine that the differences between the two sets of kids is not as great as it might once have been. The BBC's Michelle Hussein spoke with Sam Armstrong of the Oxford University Press and one of the judges, author of the Young Bond children's book series, Charlie Higson. First, here's Sam Armstrong.
Some of the words that we've seen that we haven't seen in previous years are words like minion, which we've decided is the children's word of the year. And we actually see that they're using words like ocelot and spawn and nether. And if you have children who are playing Minecraft, those are all words that are taken from that context. And troll.
Ocelot and spawn come up in Minecraft, don't they? Minions.
They do. And minion is from Despicable Me.
But are you saying that, I mean, that this is essentially not children creatively coming up with their own words on the basis of something they've seen, but merely copying a word that they've heard on television or seen on Minecraft?
Not even copying. They're taking the words that they're maybe find coming across in films and gaming that they wouldn't normally come across, or possibly even things that they see on the news or things that they're learning about at school. And they take those films, books, games, world events, and use those as a springboard into their own narrative. And they take the words such as minion, and they will use it not only in the sense of a little yellow creature from the film, but also in the traditional sense. So we're seeing a lot of words that are being used that maybe you wouldn't expect to see in the vocabulary of an under 13-year-old. So you have minions who throw people into dungeons, which would be the traditional sense. And we also have ocelots, which are an entity in Minecraft.
Right.
But then we also see a character called Bill the Ocelot, which we're told is like a small leopard, fast and spotty. So they're using him in their own ways and really kind of creating characters and enriching their own vocabulary with them.
Charlie Higson, as you judged these entries, would you overall, hearing the kinds of words that came up and the influences, would you overall see this as a positive thing that children you think children's language is being enriched by what see?
It's not just language, it's everything. I mean, you know, my kids learned as much from their computers and from watching television as they did at school, I think.
Yeah, but in terms of enriching language, I mean, if you hear a child say lol or OMG or use that in their creative writing,
that's an enrichment. Any new words that come in, any new words that kids are learning, that is by definition enriching the language. It's adding to it, and you know they will be using it their own ways. But you know they absolutely know the difference between when you would use lol and when you wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and in fact, it's something that we see very much in the stories, is that there is very little abbreviations, because children are confident writing for different purposes. So in the stories that they're writing, they're trying to create a drama, suspense, mystery, and they very rarely use abbreviations and kind of computer type language. They have 500 words. They pick and choose their vocabulary very carefully so that it's really effective. And you will find that they can write very formally or informally, depending on the purpose of their writing.
Charlie Hickson, you know, your young Bond books, I have to say, are particularly popular in our house. But do you feel as a writer a responsibility to expand children's vocabulary? Because when I look at children's writing, there are some very popular series of books which I know don't necessarily have any words that particularly stretch children who are reading them at a particular age. Should they be stretched?
A little bit. You don't want to overdo it. I mean, certainly, the young Bond series that I was writing is set in the 1930s, and I would occasionally put in references and words to things that they would think, oh, that's interesting, I wonder what that means, and find out about it. If you do it too much, it spoils the whole flow and they can't read it if they constantly think, I don't know what that word
then.
Is.
It's a barrier to their enjoyment. Yeah. Sam Armstrong, was there no point where you had concerns about the use of text speak or purely derivative words, which, you know, perhaps children weren't using with any great thought or extra imagination of their own?
No, not at all. I think what's so amazing about the 500 words competition is the creativity of the writing. And what you can see is children becoming really confident with vocabulary and being able to play with it themselves. So they create new words, they make their own words, they add suffixes such as phobia. You get something like history testophobia. They add logists, like a mucologist, which is a creature which gives people the most disgusting mucusy coughs. So they're playing with making up their own words, which is means that we can see that the kind of vocabulary that they're building is really enriching. And they're not frightened of using technical vocabulary either. So one of my favourite words is furfuracious, which means covered in bran-like scales. So you can see that they're having fun and word confidence, which is very valuable.
Furfuracious. I shall have to see whether I can work that into a script one day. Thank you both, Sam Armstrong and Charlie Hickson.
I love the way that both of them batted back those questions about text speak and the implication that language may be going to hell in a handbasket. I take two things from that. New words are okay, and even kids know how to code switch. Fancy that. We have more at pri.org/language. The World in Words is also on Facebook, and I'm on Twitter. My handle is Patricox, PatriCox. Thanks for listening. More soon.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, exploring the human endeavor. The World in Words is also supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.